What is good for the American people? What is good for the American people? That should be the first thing in our minds. We've got a lot of people that want to help people. And what they're doing is they're destroying people. As far as I'm concerned, the worst sin on the planet is to make it so someone doesn't ever know the joy of work. Never underestimate any enemy, ever. Elon thinks a lot like the military look at strategy. And if you have a small army that's very well armed, they'll always beat a big army. Always. It's a rabble versus Navy SEALs, basically. Problem is that, do we make steel here anymore? No. Do we make, do we do anything here anymore? No. Why is that? How did that happen? People who are greedy and the rest of us that were cheap. I want it next to free. That's where everything goes to hell in a handbasket.
So the things that are front of mind, and you tell me which one you want to start with. So the tariff stuff with auto is very interesting to me. The Tesla Compact and the newer vehicle, based on some of the guidance we got from the company and your tour of the factory,
Prototype shop.
Yeah, So that's interesting to me. I'll definitely want to talk about Slate. So which of those three you want to start with? Do you have a preference? Tariffs, Slate, Tesla?
Whatever. You feel comfortable
should
with.
Should we do tariffs?
We just use your... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I want to do it for you. This is your thing. So just whatever you want to do, I'll do it. I am the guest, not the host.
Well, but we're brothers, Sandy. We decide.
I know,
we can decide together.
And that's why my brother... do what you will. Okay.
So the tariff stuff is a very interesting one for me, because that's been going on like crazy. One of the things that we've talked about many times on the channel when we've had you on as well was this whole discussion about how China has got a stranglehold on the supply chain for electric vehicles, for batteries, for manufacturing. They've just been making insane strides for the last couple of decades. And it seems like with this new administration, I know there's been a lot of chaos and a lot of different sort of interpretations of what they're doing. There's definitely a lot of stuff happening with those prohibitive tariffs they placed on China. But one of the primary sectors in the world that are being impacted by this is the automotive. And we've seen some exemptions being put in place for automotive specifically. And so, like, at a high level, the way we've thought about it is the companies that are more localized to a specific region are going to perform better if these tariffs do hold for the long term, because they're essentially going to be insulated by some of the biggest impacts of it, which is importing stuff from countries like China that are being heavily impacted with tariffs, let's say. So I'm just curious to get your high-level read. How are you viewing this right now? Do you think this is putting... Tesla's a big thing we talk about in the channel. They seem to want to localize supply chain as much as possible. It feels like they're one of the best insulated from this thing. But then it's also like, okay, what does this mean for China's ability to get their EVs into other markets? And, you know, what's going on over there? So I'm just curious, like, we start at a high level. What's your overarching thought process with this whole tariff thing with auto? And then we'll take it into different rabbit holes.
Okay, so first off, Trump wrote a book. It's called The Art of the Deal. Did you ever read it? Nobody has. You read it? Did you? Did you really read it?
Oh, yeah. I had to read it.
You had to read it.
You can't not read the book that the president wrote about how he negotiates deals before he comes back into office.
And so what's he doing? Does it sound like what he's done in his book or what?
Maybe just a little bit.
Maybe. Well, I'm telling you what he's trying to do is work out a better deal for the United States. By the way, I was shocked to find out how much money and effort and whatever we put into Japan and China, Japan and Germany to protect their borders. Can I ask you a question? Why? What the hell? I mean, World War II has been open. I don't know if you're aware of this, but it's been open a long time, like 80
I've
years.
Heard.
So,
I've heard.
Yeah, it's getting on. But here we are protecting the borders of Japan and protecting the borders of Germany when these are two of the richest countries on the planet. What are we thinking? That's got to go. And by the way, how much of the tariffs for us to ship our stuff into Europe? Woohoo! They're huge. Yeah. He is doing what a good president should do. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of comments on that one. But
positive
what is the job of the president? The president's job is to ensure that the American people are taken care of and they have a level playing field. That's what he's doing. Tariffs today, you know, all this yammering about 147% and blah, blah. All this shit's going to settle out. It'll settle down and we will get a better deal. And that's what he's doing. And he'll push it until he absolutely has to. When he thinks that it's fair enough, because it'll never be fair. We've been idiots for a long time in this country, giving away the farm because there's too many people who are getting paid by some of these foreign characters. I'm not going down that path, but I will tell you, there's a lot of folks that I think should be classified as treacherous or treasonous and lined up and released from this earth. I don't get it. But anyway, so let's start there. This is a negotiation period that Trump's got going on. I do not care about what he says right now. I want to see what it's going to look like in January. That's when we'll know what's going on. And then, guess what? After he's been in for a year, then you will be able to see which direction he's really going to take and with whom. Now, for all those yo-hos that thought, oh, we'll just send it cheap to China. We'll just get it cheaper from China. That's our friends in Massachusetts there, north of Boston or west of Boston. I can't remember. But they thought that was a great idea. We get rid of American workers. Oh, hell, that's a great idea. We'll just, we won't have to have those nasty mines and whatnot. That's a great idea. We won't have to refine. That's a great idea. Now what? Well, you know, we really need to, these guys, you never know what they're going to say next. But I can tell you one thing for sure. Everything that comes out of that that place in Boston is a pack of crap for the average American, period. That's the way it works. That is the way it works. It's always going to work that way because where greed comes and cheap people are everywhere, and that's basically Americans are cheap, and big companies are greedy. You're always going to make bad decisions. And in my book, I have one of these days I'll publish it. I have a book, Cheap Always Loses. And in there, I'm going to just, the things that I've seen, I will put in and that'll be that. But as far as the tariffs are concerned, let's wait until January next year and we'll have that chat again. We can do it on our birthday.
Oh, I love that idea.
I thought you would. So that's the end of that. Let's move on.
Yeah.
January 19, everybody. January 19th, if you want to send Farsad a big, I don't need any presents, but Farsad, absolutely flat out.
I don't need presents either.
Big presents.
I'm good. A present for my son. He's turning one in about a year. So y'all send him some presents for my little one.
I will send. Yeah. When's his birthday?
It's May 29th.
Oh, May 29th. Yeah. Oh, that's coming up.
Yeah, it's coming up. Gosh. Yeah, he'll be 11 months in 2 days, right? One day, tomorrow. Yeah,
one day tomorrow.
Oh. Crazy. Telling Time flies, man.
So is there another bun in the oven then? Or are we looking the Prasad dynasty? Or,
that's coming.
A baseball team, I think.
I do. State. No, we have a football team. Come on, Sandy. Football team.
Football team.
We've got to get a football team. Yeah. National champions next year, I'm telling you. Yeah, I think... So the reason why I asked you that question is because you've had decades of experience with large scale manufacturing. This is automotive, and automotive is one of those things where something like this could be very impactful because of how globalized the supply chain has become for automotive over time. Yeah. Have you talked to partners, companies, people that want to do business? Has this sort of thing, has it changed the way they're approaching where they want to set up shop, where they want to set up the supply chain? What are you hearing that you can share if you're able to share anything?
Yeah, so I've talked to a number of OEMs, a lot of tier ones, but it's really the tier threes and literally the tier fours that are the ones who are the most impactful. And again, back to Trump, he doesn't really care too much about a lizard in the middle of the desert. If there's lithium there, if there's something that we need that is critical to the well-being of the United States people, not a lizard, a people, then he's bending the rules or changing the rules or whatever. So taking it out of the ground is one thing. Now I got to refine it. So now you're into dealing with a whole lot of people who say, no, we don't want to do that. Okay, fine. You don't want to do it. So you want your children to starve to death? You want the United States to fall to a third world country? Which you have to make a choice. Which one? Which one do you want to do? You don't know anything about refining. I can guarantee you that. That
especially when your largest competitor has a sort of chokehold on that stranglehold on the entire industry, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's been a long time. We keep looking at, what about the lizard? What is it? Hey, what about that stuff in California? I just found out about smelt. They didn't want to take any water from this lake because of some fish. Hey, I'll tell you what. When I was a kid living in Canada, we used to go down with a garbage can, a steel garbage can. We'd punch holes in the bottom of it. We'd walk into the lake, dip the garbage can in, and pull out smelt by the garbage can full. That's how many are in lakes around in Michigan. Okay. If this is an endangered species? What, are you shitting me? Are you kidding me? Yeah. So at the end of the day, there's not as many smelt as there used to be because there was too many guys getting garbage cans full of smelt to eat. But at the end of the day, we've got to start looking at what's good for the country. What's good for the people? I think that there's a lot of misdirection. And so we have to start looking at really and truly, we'll let the Palisades burn down because we're worried about a fish. We won't mine for lithium or thorium or any of these other materials that we need because there might be a lizard. There's lots of lizards. You know, we got a lot of them. They may not be very many in that spot, but we got a lot of them somewhere else. We can always make lizards or reproduce them. At the end of the day, we've got to start getting smarter. What is good for the American people? What is good for the American people? That should be the first thing in our minds. That's what the president is looking at. What's good for the American people?
Hans, we have our first sponsor. What do you think about that? Isn't that exciting?
About damn time.
About damn time. We've been doing this for far too long. Thank you to our friends at Rebellionaire for people that are investors in Tesla. They are an investment firm that helps people that might have an oversized or very big position in Tesla where other investment firms wouldn't really pay attention to you because they think, you know, you might be too risky or crazy, whatever you might want to say. These guys can step in and help you with that type of investing thesis. I personally know Bradford and Matt, and I've known him for a while. Matt, as if you follow this podcast, is one of my best friends, one of the most beautiful people I've ever met. He is fantastic.
Obviously, he must be paying you if you're not telling him how stupid he was.
Yeah, obviously. These guys do excellent work. They've done a lot of unique research around the Tesla story. They've done things like cross-country trips with full self-driving. They follow things like the Megapack and the energy story very closely.
And not only that, you know, they've been part of the Tesla community for years and years and years. If you go back and look at some of Jordan Gieseke's earliest videos on YouTube with his channel, The Limiting Factor, you'll see that they were sponsored by Halter Ferguson Financial, which is Bradford's financial firm. It is the firm behind Rebellionaire. I can say personally, I've benefited a lot from the research that Jordan has put out there publicly, and that research is funded in part by the generous sponsorship of people like Bradford.
They're just folks that understand the conviction that people have over the story. So if you're interested, go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad. We'll have a link for that in the description and the comment section below. Check them out. When you click on that link, they'll know we sent you there. And now back to our podcast.
While we're on the topic of refining, Sandy, I'm curious, if you put on your Art of the Deal hat and you survey how this whole negotiation is going, and we look at the fact that China went almost like straight to nuclear with their export ban on rare earth materials, which are almost exclusively refined in China and are an incredibly critical component in basically all of modern life. What does that tell you about how the negotiations are going?
Well, it just means that, you know, we were behind the times. And when you allow an enemy, and I read his thing, but I prefer looking at a military kinds of applications. Because if I use military rules against somebody who has a normal business, I will defeat them every time because they don't have a long-term strategy. Never. Not in U.S. So, and that's the truth with the government as well. They don't have long-term strategies. That's why we're in the problem that we're in. So if I look at what's going on, China, they are 100% military thinking, 100%. No ifs, ands, or buts. The greatest general that ever lived, and this is where I get most of my ideas from, is Sun Tzu. General Sun Tzu was a Chinese guy, lived before Christ, and he, so more than 2,000 years ago, he developed all of the classic maneuvers, if you like. If you're in the military and you want to be an officer, you have to read that book. And he basically, the Chinese basically, they look at that book. By the way, the book is called The Art of War. Art of the Deal, Art of War, whatever. So that's a really good book. And I recommend Thomas Cleary. Dr. Cleary has the best transcript. It's the easiest. It's the easiest for you to understand. So there you go. That's what I'd highly recommend. Read that book. Don't read the, crap. It just wastes your brain cells. So read that book, and that'll tell you a lot about what's going to happen. The Chinese, okay, you're going to put tariffs on us. Guess what? We're going to squeeze you like there's no tomorrow. What's the counter for that? You're playing chess. He shoved forward a pawn. What are you going to do? Are you going to try and just allow him to do that, or are you going to try and circumvent that problem? Well, the way to circumvent the problem is to instantly start mining. Refining is a little bit of an issue. Digging holes, not so bad. It's mostly permits and things like that. Refining, that's tougher. Because now you've got to have machinery and you've got to have smart people. And guess what? We don't have them. They went to China. They went to China for their last years. The Chinese paid them a tremendous amount of money. And I know that because they paid me a tremendous amount of money to go and teach them how to design cars. I did that from 2014 to 2020. How about that? Why did I do that? Because I was encouraged by BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen, GM, you name it. Sandy, we're getting our cars built in China. You know, we're saving a lot of money. We're making a lot of money. If you go over there and teach them how to design cars, we can make even more money. Yeah. Not a smart move.
So it's almost like a lot of money right into the grave.
Yeah, they weaponized the, Western greed, capitalistic greed, whatever you want to call it, to strengthen themselves.
Again, yeah. Is it an MBA? Or is it a general?
Yeah.
Which one wins in the long run? Okay. A general is going to come along and say, we need this many men. We need this many bullets. We need this blah, blah, blah. An MBA is going to say, well, wait a minute. That sounds like a lot of money. We better discuss this. Let's find a cheaper source. Put your people into the, and I'm going to talk about some of that stuff at the end of this, because this is the first time I've seen anything any kind of a movement that puts us in the right direction for the defense of the country. And I'll talk about that at the end. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of like, you know, with all the conversations we've had, it felt like we needed some sort of shock to the system of some sorts to actually get the ball rolling, because the momentum away from America towards China when it came to supremacy around manufacturing, supply chain, technologies, just all the core fundamentals to build a civilization, they were leaving the U.S. and then we're going to China specifically. They're getting a lion's share. And then we're just like, more because cheaper. And then, you know, I do wonder how often people in the United States drive through middle America. Like people that live in the coasts, right? I don't think people understand how hollow this country is.
Flyover for a reason.
For a reason, exactly. Yeah. And it was such an eye-opening you know, my wife and I, we would do these yearly road trips to Pennsylvania from Texas since once we moved here. We love to drive around the country. And once we like moved away from Pennsylvania, went to Texas and had a chance to really drive through the country. Yeah. And we stopped at the superchargers and, you know, drove through communities. It really was such an eye-opening experience when you actually see what the country actually looks like outside of the coast. It is mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It's absolutely mind-blowing. And this whole time, up until recent times, I felt like something has to happen that's very drastic for this to move. And I didn't know what it was, right? I'm just hoping, I'm almost like desperately hoping for somebody to be like, hey, the country is kind of like hollow. We need to figure out how to bring stuff back, right? We need to figure out how to bring stuff back. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see if it actually works. I mean, I think some of the commentary you're making is like it, with China being so long-term focused and the United States being primarily, I mean, mostly a short-term focus, we almost need like the proper incentive structures or codification of things into our law books and maybe the Constitution that retains that vision, which is, hey, don't give away too much. Like you've given away too much.
Right.
You know?
So we made a trip when I was driving the Model 3. We went from Eugene, Oregon, all the way down to Brownsville in Texas to see Elon. We drove through that area. Wow.
Yeah.
There's nothing, not even tumbleweed in some of these places. But there is Tesla chargers. I mean, we didn't have any problem. There was no range anxiety, blah, 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 blah. None of that stuff. Zero. None. Zero. And we were being chased by a blizzard. 32 inches was falling like about 2 hours in back of us. We went like rocket ships to get the hell out of the way of that. And nobody knows. I didn't. I'd never done that before. Why would I want to go there? There's nothing. But you know what is there? All the elements that we need are right there. They're right there. Why is it that we had to go to, well, you know, I'm a big shot. That's why. And what do they know? Nothing. They are short-term thinkers. Where's my bonus? That is what they think about the most. Where's my bonus? And when you've got people like that, you can't win.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm hoping, I think for me, like the signal is like once we get some sort of, I know they're trying to pass a bill where, you know, Trump calls it the big, beautiful bill, which is going to be like, you know, there's going to be deregulation with tax cuts, et cetera, tax incentives. Yeah. I think that might be the signal that tells us, hey, there, this might actually happen. But without the deregulation push to actually allow these companies
to go on shore stuff. So I don't like big. I don't like big. And because usually what happens is they slap a whole bunch of other crap that we don't want. I'd like to have each bill stand on its own. And the one that I'd like to see is that we can mine and we can refine. And that's the two things I'd like to see. I'm not interested in polluting the air. By the way, my first job was working for a company called Century Spray. And the solution to pollution is dilution. And quite frankly, we made air cleaners. We did every kind of scrubbing kind of process you could imagine for chimneys and for smokestacks and everything else. Wasn't really popular in those days, but we have the technology. That is something we still have. All these things for refining and mining and everything else, they can all be made so that they're tolerant for the environment. And maybe we do kill a couple of lizards, but at the end of the day, we're not going to be killing every bird. There's no butterflies in my neighborhood. None. Zero. Zero. Why is that? When I was a kid, I mean, they were like a plague. They were everywhere. Not anymore. How did that happen? Well, we don't want to, you know, I don't like mosquitoes. Oh, milkweed. I don't like that. Mm. That's how we did it. That's how we did it. So now everybody's worried about a lizard. Not me. Not me. You killed off the butterflies. They were in my neighborhood. A lizard in the middle of the Mojave Desert, I don't give a shit about. So there you go. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. Before we turn this whole thing into a geopolitics show, which I very easily could.
I don't want to. We've done enough of this shit. Yeah, Let's move on.
I love talking about this.
Yeah.
Hans, did you want to stage the next conversation? I know like the Tesla conversation was an interesting one. But did you want to kick us off with the next one?
Do you want to pull up the ad here?
Oh yeah, sure.
Is that what you're asking me for?
No, I'm asking you, what do you want to lead with? What's the next segment you want to lead with?
You want to do Tesla, or do you want to do Slate, or
something else?
Well, let's go to Slate first, since it'll be a little bit of a lighthearted change of pace, and then we can come back to Tesla.
Great, so sounds good.
We'll do.
Go for it.
Did you want to actually play this, Sandy?
No, because it's long, but I definitely want to reference it. This is the funniest ad ever. Everybody on the planet, go and have a look at this Slate ad. I cannot taxidermy for human beings, and they're advertising the Slate pickup truck. I was there. They didn't have this ad playing, but they sent it after the reveal. And I have looked at this thing about 8 times. I laugh my tail off every time. No car company ever came, not even Tesla, come up with something like this. This is incredibly funny. Taxiderm my family. Are you kidding me? This is hilarious. We haven't got time to, it's kind of long, but everybody on the planet should get a chance to look at that ad. This is hilarious. I mean it. This is great. This is the way a car company should be acting.
It's 2 minutes. Should we just watch it? I mean, I've never watched it.
Oh, go I'm ahead. Okay
with
go
it.
Ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Play it. Go for
Works
it.
Works for me.
Go for it.
With Human Grade Taxidermy, family really is forever.
I'm Ross Fletcher. I'm the CEO of Taxiderm My Family. Do you know what taxidermy is?
Yes.
Well, we do that for your loved ones.
What do you think of the logo? I was going for like a punk rock graveyard theme.
It's an unconventional business, yeah. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, ironically.
Is that Grandma Jean? It is. That's okay.
But with Slate, anything is possible. So I can take an SUV to a pickup, and then I can switch back.
I think it hits that kind of sweet spot of like a little bit dangerous and a little bit sweet.
Slate's been able to adapt to our very specific business needs.
Add pickling liquid to shopping list.
And we've got a lot of those.
So this is the adult male. This is the petite senior. We use the petite senior a lot, the most, just because nature, I guess.
Or, you know, when we got canceled online for some ill-advised branding, we needed a full body rewrap, and we were able to do that same day.
I don't know how to turn comments off.
It's about craftsmanship, yes, of course.
Not only is the texture incredible, but it's got a 15-year warranty.
But it's also about bulk human transport.
Whoa. You have it upside down.
Finding employees is tough. Like, I've got two.
Who is that?
Janice.
I need one decent one.
There should be no reason a body goes missing. Okay, not even if it's for half a day.
You know, my brother always said, like, oh, you'll never be able to run a business.
Michael, what if we say the next one is free? Not that I would wish that upon you,
but considering how affordable Slate is, it's been incredible, instrumental to the success of our business.
I got a lot of other ideas, so I can wrap this in whatever I want. So
I love it.
That's what's really convenient about this is like some of the ideas, you just go for it, and if they fail, then guess what? You got other ideas. I do.
That's great. That's great. I mean, that's so. I think what I love about that ad, it's just so. So against what we've been for the last 4 or 5 years of like, hey, you can't make something like this. You can't make something like this. And they've capitalized on that to shine that on a much needed concept that's been missing, especially something that America can vastly benefit from.
This is American humor.
Yeah.
This is what we used to laugh at.
Yes.
Nowadays, what? Think of the children. I want to have sad. In fact, on the way in to work this morning, my wife and I were commenting on how many sad songs there are. I mean, he left me.
Oh, she left me.
I mean, get a dog. I don't care. So this is kind of, I like the irreverence of this. It's hilarious. Is somebody going to do it? Probably not.
Yeah.
But do I care? No. It's just hilarious. And to me, this is what's missing in America. We don't have any humorists anymore. A lot of guys that were in comedy, they buggered off. Why? because nothing is funny. Everything is really serious. Yeah. Well, guess what? That kind of thing is what destroys nations. If a country doesn't have honor and humor, it isn't a country. I don't know what it is, but it isn't a country. So Slate, to me, I don't know. I like the car, but I love whoever's in charge of marketing. they know what the hell they're doing. Yeah, they caught my attention big time.
And I definitely want to talk about Slate here, because this is they had a reveal of their a new company kind of came out of a stealth, let's say, and they sort of unveiled this car that is going to start, I think they're saying below 20,000 after current EV tax incentives. So it's probably going to be around 27, 28 start price, whatever that price is.
And no, it's going to be less than that.
Less than that. Okay.
I think so.
25 or something like that?
Below 25 probably.
Yeah. Okay. And this is really super simple. So not even electric windows, just super bare bones, 150-mile range. It's just meant to go from point A to point B as affordably as possible. It even has the NACS, the North American Charging Standard, which Tesla pioneered. So it's kind of, you know, they're thinking about this thing as plug it in and literally anywhere. It will just do what you need to do from point A to point B. It's kind of like a Tacoma or smaller sort of size, I guess.
It's smaller.
Yeah. It's about the same size as what there used to be a car called a Ford 100 pickup, and it's about that size. It's like I don't know. I don't think there's anything really in the market that's like it. So it's small. There's no question about it.
And you were at the unveil, so I think you were there. We saw videos of you sort of looking at it. So what are the things that stick out to you about this car? Because what's interesting to me is like it's how customizable it is, and sort of how modular it is. You can turn it from a pickup truck to like a fastback to an SUV to sort of like a Wrangler looking thing. Just talk us through what you saw and what your thoughts are.
Okay, so first off, as you know, I sold part of the company. And the guy that was in charge of that sale, his name is Justin Merrill. He bought two already. He's having, or not bought them, but put money down. It's $50 or something like that. And so he's got them. He's buying them for the two farms that he has. I'm buying two with every kit they've got. And because I'm really interested in a car. One will be here for us to drive and fool around with. The other one will tear it down and do a costing analysis, every other analysis imaginable on it. So I've known about this car for a long time. When the company was called Recar, not Slate, when it was called Recar, I lent them space and whatnot in the back of our factory. So it started out kind of like right here. As they got more money, they moved out to something bigger. And we stayed in contact. We gave them ideas on what we thought would be good cost reduction kind of ideas to put into their vehicle. And they I'm going to do a YouTube probably next week or the week after, I'm not sure, but anyway, soon. And what we're going to do is we're going to walk through their engineering and prototype shop, which is just down the road from us here in Michigan. And we're going to go through and see the whole works. And that is really where you're going to see the genius that they put in place. And remember, they've only been around for about 2 and a bit years. Think on that. That's ponderous. 2 years and you've gone to something that's got 5-star crash rating, including Sorb, and they've figured out how much everything's going to cost, where they're going to build it. It's going to be in Indiana. All these things, all done.
Wow.
Amazing how fast we can move in the United States. People have no clue. We used to make ships. I'm going to talk about some of this stuff in a bit, but we used to make ships and tanks and airplanes and whatever, wicked fast. That's how World War One too, but World War II was saved by the U.S. Nobody could produce at the speed we could. Problem is that do we make steel here anymore? No, do we make, do we do anything here anymore? No. Why is that? How did that happen? And you go back to, what did they do? I mean, who created this mess? People who were greedy and the rest of us that were cheap. I want it next to free. That's where everything goes to hell in a handbasket. So I think that Slate is hopefully going to wake up the rest of the car industry. And when they start looking at what can be done and the speed that it can be done in, if they don't wake up, they're dead. And quite frankly, we've told other car companies, hey, you can't do it yourself fast. We can. We know how to make a car in no time flat. And our methods and whatnot kind of were proven out by what went on with Slate. And they had virtually no money to start with. And the amount of money that they did get is chump change in comparison to where they are. And that's a fact. I mean, a couple of $100 million don't go very far when you're trying to build a car. And there they are. I mean, yeah. And who are these guys? Well, they're folks that were from Chrysler and Ford and General Motors, Honda, Toyota. Just wanted to do something new and different. And with Eric Kuiper, the guy who's in charge of engineering and the guy that actually started Recar, you couldn't ask for a better engineer. I begged him to come and work for Monroe, but he wanted to do other things. He wanted to experience the deal, associated with, I made a car. And he did. And he did a hell of a job, him and his team. And like I said, we know almost everybody on that team. It was like old home week when I was down there. Oh, and by the way, thank you, Colleen, again, for getting me my jacket with Tesla. Yeah, the teardown Titan jacket. Anyhow, so, the whole team there, I was really impressed. I've been to a couple of reveals. Normally, this one was pretty fun. Yeah.
It seemed very upbeat.
Trucks and everything.
Yeah.
It was very upbeat. And how many times have you ever seen a reveal where they bring out truck after truck after truck after truck after truck? It's usually, oh, now look at this. And here the model will do that. And I will blah, blah, blah. No.
Yeah.
They had some talking here and there. But for the most part, the truck was the star of the show.
That's awesome. I think what's sort of interesting to me about this company is that they usually, every automaker starts at the high end when they're brand new. Like we saw with Tesla, we saw with Lucid, we saw with Rivian, you know, we saw with all these new automakers. Yeah. They try to start at the high end so that they can recoup the money from getting the tooling going and the factory going. And then they go down market so that they can get the economies of scale so that they can actually make a profit at the lower level. Slate's going the other way. Slate's starting at the bottom end and they're trying to go super bare bones. And I think the reason why the car is so absolutely bare bones is because making a profit at that price point is going to be extremely difficult unless you yank everything out, right? So how do you know how they've done that? Like, what's their plan from a profitability perspective? Like, or is that something that we'll learn more in the next couple of weeks, or do you have any insight into that at all?
So let's start off with how we do it here versus how they do it elsewhere. Did the Japanese start off with the Lexus?
No.
Why?
Because if you can make a cheap car,
if you can make an inexpensive vehicle, it's easy going to make a very expensive vehicle. So why is it that the Chinese and the Japanese and the Koreans all started out with dinky little cars? And
that's a great point.
We don't even know how you make money on that. And what do we start out with? Big, giant, luxurious, blah, blah, whatever. One, they think of things that are military. Sun Tzu. We think of things that are from Boston. Ooh, let's make a big one and then we can make it. And
I have a feeling you don't like Boston.
I love Boston. Are you kidding? I love going there. The legal seafood and whatnot. There's only one part of Boston I don't care for. But at the end of the day,
it's funny that you say that though, Sandy. Just because it's extremely true. But Clayton Christensen, this has always been his critique of Tesla specifically. He said that one day the EV market will be taken over by someone who starts at the low end, like the Japanese did, like the Koreans did in the previous automotive waves. And I mean, that certainly seems to be where Tesla's main competitive threats are coming from, is China on the low end. And then we'll see what Slate is able to do.
Well, the one thing that's different, too, is that Tesla is vertically integrated and most car companies are not. Why was that? Well, Elon learned a very valuable lesson when he was dealing with tier ones who didn't want to work with him at all. It forced him into refining the car the most. This seat is a Tesla seat. My desk has a Tesla seat. I have two more sitting in here that are Tesla seats. We took them out of the cars. We put them on little rolly things and turned them into, because they're the most comfortable chair in the planet. There is no seat in any car company that makes as good as this. They were forced to do that by the tier ones. They were also forced to go into manufacturing their HVAC systems that were radically different than everybody else, because no tier one would work with them. So if you're going to do something like that, then you can make differences. And when Toyota brought out the Lexus and we stripped off some of the paint and found out that they were using tailor welded blanks, which is, you basically have two thicknesses of sheet metal, you laser weld them together, and then you put them into a stamping die, clunk, clunk, clunk. And what happens is you don't have great big giant chunks of scrap. Why did they do that? Well, they had to try and keep the cost down, because they didn't really know what they didn't know what the market was going to be like when they shipped a Japanese luxury car. As a matter of fact, Henry Ford II said, we'll let the Japanese have the small cars and because they'll never understand pickup trucks and luxury vehicles. Wrong. Never underestimate any enemy ever. Okay. And so at the end of the day, Elon, thinks a lot like the stuff I was talking about, defensive kind of stuff. The military look at strategy. And if you have a small army that's very well armed, they'll always beat a big army, always. It's a rabble versus Navy SEALs, basically. And that's kind of like what's happening right now. Now, is Slate going to take over the market? I don't know. But I can tell you one thing for sure. They're going to take over the market that they're in, which nobody else is in. If I want to get into a market, I listen to Sun Tzu. Attack where your enemy is not. Wow. What does that mean? That means that Slate entered a market that nobody else has. Who else has got a truck that can be turned into an SUV in an hour and 15 minutes?
Sub-20K.
With wrapping. And they wrapped it as well. So, yeah. I mean, it's easy to beat an MBA. Easy.
Yeah.
And as long as we keep doing things the same way, we will wind up. So let me ask you a question. Do you know what the market share for General Motors was in the United States in about 1960?
I'm going to guess like 30 to 40%.
It was higher than that. I think I've heard you say this before, Sandy. Wasn't it like 60?
60%. What do they got now?
Like 4.
12 or 13. Depends on what day it is. Okay. Here's the deal. How does that happen? How does that happen? All you got to do is look
Harvard
at
MBAs happen.
Did. What?
I said Harvard MBAs happen.
hey, I didn't want to say it, but you did. Now, okay, so anybody that's got
shout
a problem
with
me, just go straight to Hans here and disregard everything I've said. Yeah.
Well, that's the interesting thing about, you know, The Innovator's Dilemma is such a widely read book. Yeah. And when you step back and you think about, like, Clayton Christensen trained all these people and then they went out into all these companies. And the way I've come to think about the Innovator's Dilemma is Clayton Christensen's postmortem on why all of the people that he trained killed all these major companies.
So sitting on my bookshelf right now are many copies of the Innovator's Dilemma or the Inventor's Dilemma, whatever. I've got a bunch of copies of that, and I have a bunch of copies of the Art of War. And why is that? Because every once in a while, somebody will say, "Well, where did you get that information from?" Or, you know, I'd like to see blah blah blah. And I just pull them out. Here you go. I sign them even. There you go. And I've given them to a lot of people who went from basically a good idea and dirt poor to being extremely wealthy. Anybody can run a big company. If you've got a huge company, a little mistake anywhere won't make a big difference. However, over time, that big company will shrink. It will be forced to shrink because if everyone has the same outlook, where's my big bonus? It's not the company, it's me. I should be the CEO. I should be promoted. If you've got a big company full of those kind of people, you're going to lose. You have to have people who are workaholics. You have to have people who are inventors, people who don't care about money, but care about the satisfaction that they get about producing a product. And that is very hard to find.
Yeah.
But that's what we hire. At Monroe, we hire workaholics. I don't want to get into divorces and shit like that. But at the end of the day, a workaholic is kind of like what I'm looking for. Yeah.
MonroeAndAssociates.com. If you're a workaholic, go check it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that your website?
Exactly. LeanDesign.com.
Oh, LeanDesign. That's right.
LeanDesign.
I think what's interesting about, you know, I love that you bring up the Art of War and like sort of these books to describe this, because I think the more I study capitalism and the more I study business, I mean, capitalism is really a battlefield of between people that are trying to win the future, and they win the future by working as hard as possible and as smartly as possible, yeah. and where they can set up the vector to go to the future as quickly as they can. And then if they think they have a good way to bring the future forward, that's where banks come in and they give them money from the future to get to the future faster.
Yeah.
That's capitalism. And the ones that win capitalism play that way.
You know? And in the old days, we used to do that. Now we don't.
Yeah.
Now what happens is if you want money, you got to go to a foreign country. They'll bankroll you sometimes, but at the end of the day, we don't have meritocracy as in merit. We don't have meritocracy anymore. We have something, I don't know what it's called, but, everybody gets a gold star, you know, that kind of stuff. That's not meritocracy. That's some sort of social.
But don't you feel socialism. Like that's changing now? Don't you feel like a something in the air that maybe, you know, I think between the stuff that has up in media and the Trump admin getting elected, don't you feel like
okay,
there's...
Okay, yeah. Well, how long will that last?
I don't know.
Trump
that's
will
a good
be in
question.
Office for another 3 years, 3.5 years or something like that. What's going to happen after that? It'll go right back down. Because people like to switch. This sounds too hard. Well... nobody's giving me any blah, blah. So at the end of the day, you're going to get into a situation where it'll go back. The United States flip-flops back and forth all the time. Meritocracy and that way of thinking and whatnot, that kind of ended in around the 60s. I watched it because when I was a kid learning how to be a toolmaker, when they said, we're going to kick your ass, they really did. And one guy kicked me right into a chip bin, which was very painful. And very painful. And then he found out that not only did he make a mistake, his mistake kind of like trumped mine. I didn't make a mistake. I did exactly what was on the drawing, drilled the holes where they were supposed to be. He put his tape measure at the wrong point. Forgot that this is a datum kind of drawing, which means it's 1 inch away from different. And he then, in the old days, this used to happen. You know what? I made a mistake, Sandy. I know you're only 17, but we're going to the bar, and I'm going to buy you a big steak and a lot of booze. Please forgive me. In front of everybody. That guy was... he was definitely the boss. And and that's kind of, you don't see that anymore. Now it's like, oh, well, you know, they're just peasants. That was meritocracy. And we've kind of drifted away from that for gold stars for everybody. And, you know, I love you, you love me. That's bullshit, too. It it doesn't create reality. Things don't happen like that. So,
yeah.
So this is something that I'm actually really curious about, Sandy, because I think that the reason that we were hardcore about meritocracy throughout the beginning of the last century was because we had to, because if we weren't, then the world would be overrun, come to an end.
Yeah.
And I think we're moving, you know, back into a world where China's obviously a rising great power. You know, what we're talking about with their incredible focus on you know, they have a culture that is able to work hard. They have very recent memory of, you know, if we think that the Depression is formative for personalities, and I mean, I think that the Depression is also a big reason why that focus on meritocracy, you know, was a big part of the culture in the United States. But the Depression is like a couple decades ago for Chinese. That is still in their living cultural memory.
Yeah.
Meritocracy is something that they really care about. And they have attained a lot of technical competence in these strategically important arenas. And we're going to be locked in another great power struggle and competition with them. So I guess that's my question is, will we be able to rediscover that existential, you know, need at the base level of our culture in order to engage in that competition, or are we pretty much doomed?
No, we're not doomed. But I will tell you, the meritocracy in early 1900s and whatnot was much, much easier. And it was easier because most people were either agrarian or really working for a living. And when you work for a living and you find out how hard it is to make a buck, and again, I talked about being a toolmaker, that was a piece of cake in comparison to picking tomatoes or anything else I picked as a kid. So I started working when I was 9. So at the end of the day, when you work for a living, you think differently about, I mean, like physical work. You think differently about moving ahead. When I was in China, everybody wanted to be a millionaire. There's no beggars. No, none. 2014 to 2020, I never saw one beggar. Never. How is that? I never saw anybody basically defecating in the middle of the streets. I never saw anybody puking. I never saw people on drugs. And now alcohol. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it just wasn't there. I mean, think about this. Shenzhen, where we had our offices. Shenzhen's got about 60 something million people in it. That's a population of Canada in one city. Nothing. No drugs. No people doing things like go to San Francisco for a minute. Holy moly! It doesn't take long to figure out there's something terribly wrong here. That's where we are now. How do we get to? Like in the olden days, these people were working for a living and absolutely wanted to get ahead. Now we've got, oh, don't worry. We'll take care of you. You can just sleep in the alley here, and then someone will come and clean up your mess later on. It's okay. That is not the way you're going to get meritocracy. That makes somebody happy. It makes those little people that love to help. I need to help someone. Get a dog. Have a kid. That would be even better. But at the end of the day, we've got a lot of people that want to help people. And what they're doing is they're destroying people. As far as I'm concerned, the worst sin on the planet is to make it so someone doesn't ever know the joy of work. Oh, work. Oh. The joy of work. The satisfaction associated with producing something. Doing something at the end of the day that is going to be revolutionary. Or even just, I picked apples and here you can have some. That's lost when you when you get into a welfare state or a socialistic state, whatever you want to call it.
I talk about this often with Larry Goldberg. He makes content on here too. Great mind. He We talk about the art of entrepreneurship, the art of business, yeah. the art of working. Like, I don't think people appreciate just how much art there is. I mean, just like somebody like yourself, Sandy, like, you're an entrepreneur. You've built Monroe & Associates from the ground up. You know, you've with you and your wife, I'm sure, and everybody else around you, too, they've all had a huge part in it. But there's an art to making things that is so beautiful and fun and painful. And you learn so many lessons, good and bad ones, you know, as you go through that journey. And I think that is so not well understood and not aspired to in today's society. And that is the forcing function that creates incredible things for civilization. You know, it's that kind of mentality and that kind of thing, you know?
Well, I've been asked to be on a committee to try and figure out how we're going to get tradesmen. We don't have any tradesmen left in the United States. There's something like 6,000 or 8,000 in a whole country that are toolmakers. That's Jeez. A real problem because we've sent everything. All the dies and molds have gone off to China. China makes all the machine tools. China. We don't have any. So how do we bring them back? And I made a suggestion, which was similar to my case. I went to a technical high school. In grade 9, I started making things on a lathe and milling machines and on and on. And when I got to 18, I walked out the door. I had started, my dad got me out of the fields and into a factory when I was 16. So I was 18 for 3 years in a row. Woohoo! So I got out at 18 out of high school and spent another year, got my journeyman's ticket. I was in heaven, okay, because I made a lot of money. I did what I wanted to do, which was be a toolmaker. I made things all the time. Nowadays, kids don't even make a birdhouse. Oh, do you realize how dangerous it is? Those are saws. They could cut off their fingers. Do you realize how dangerous it is here? It's, one of the kids could get a chip in his eye. What? If we're going to try and compete with the Chinese, and I've got a great video. Man, I wish I had it. It's from Japan at a Toyota factory. And there's an 8-year-old little girl putting a cylinder head together. And guess what? She's happy. She's happy to do this. She's excited. 8 years old. Here's the best part. The process sheet that she's reading from is in English. Wow. You boneheads. You fools. You intellectual morons. I cannot believe that people could be so damn dumb. Do they never look beyond their own noses? Have they ever seen anything outside of this country? Jesus. I mean, and I apologize for that.
No, you're good, please.
I'll swear, but no, not that time. At the end of the day, we have some serious issues here, and I'm getting all pissed off. I mean, so we should move on to Tesla, I think.
All right. I will tell you. I mean, I think just one last thing here is, like, I remember when we moved to the States, I was 12 years old, and I remember going to high school right when I was finally getting the grasp of the English language. And I remember just, like, one of the most vivid memories I had was just so how often students would make fun of kids that would go to Votech. So Votech is a vocational technical school that we had. We're like a hands-on.
Yeah.
And it was like, those are where all the idiots go. That's where all the people that don't go to college go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I remember that. And now, like 20 years later or whatever it's been, I'm like, wow, that was probably so damaging to the direction of the country. It's like, it's so difficult to grasp at that point. Like, if that's the culture in the school, of course you're going to give away everything. Of course
you can. And how many of those people that thought they were smart because they were going off to college ended up being the marks of a system that they can't even get out from under their student debt, and they're all retarded and they don't know anything useful?
I'm telling you right now, I have all the data on that, and you'd be horrified to find out how many students with that attitude wound up in shit shape. I mean, the numbers are staggering. They never appear. You have to dig like nobody's business to find out, but it's crap.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. I went to WD Low Technical School, Low Tech. No shit. That is the name. WB wow. Low Technical School, low tech. And guess what? In my graduating class, apart from the guys that wound up, there were some bad eggs in my class. But of my class, 50% of them were millionaires. Millionaires.
Wow.
After about 20 years. I don't know what happened in my sister in school or any of the other collegiates, but I can tell you what, I knew lots of people that were in my grade school that went to those things, and not a one became a millionaire. Engineers, number one on the hit parade. Engineers, that's who makes millions of dollars. And the next lowest down is a lot lower. Oh, engineers, oh, they're so boring, blah, blah. Well, guess what? I'm an engineer, and I may be
boring. You're not boring.
But not normally. And I'll tell you, so here's the deal. I'm going to low tech. I drive a motorcycle, and I'm wearing a tech jacket. And the name of the football team and what, the Rough Riders, as in who? Teddy Roosevelt had the Rough Riders. And guess what? I'm in Canada wearing a jacket that kind of elevates Teddy Roosevelt, an American president.
Wow.
We weren't real popular, but I wore it anyway. And quite frankly, I also had acne, and I don't want to get into it, but I didn't have any dates. At the end of the day, guess what? When I pulled up at, pulled up to do something, go to the bank or buy a hamburger or something like that, it was always, oh, you're from tech. With women, I never, my house, we didn't even talk back. But at the end of the day, if it was a guy, and that was the end of it. It was like we moved on. And that's kind of like what we're missing here in the U.S. We need technical high schools and technical high schools, not. Well, now you can go to college and we'll suck you in for some more money.
Yeah.
And then after that, you won't know anything, but you'll have that degree. Sheepskin heaven. Yeah. Didn't work out.
Yeah, and I think that's why we find this sort of Tesla story so interesting, because Tesla's sort of the encapsulation of what America can be, right? If we're going to shift the sort of direction over to Tesla, it's like you have the encapsulation of SpaceX, Tesla, really Musk industry. You got Neuralink just put in their chip in the third patient with ALS, and now he's out there making videos and stuff, which is absolutely mind blowing.
Yeah.
It's that spirit that is so incredible. And what I really want to talk about here, and I know we're at an hour, so I'm sorry if we're going to go over here, Sandy. Is that okay? I just want to check with you before.
Well, I still want to talk a little bit about what I think we should be looking at as far as defense is concerned, because we definitely need to do something about.
So you're okay? Do we keep going? You're on time? Okay, perfect. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time, by the way, dude. I really appreciate
it. No, this is important. I mean, if it isn't for the YouTubes and the blogs and whatever, how's the American people going to get any real?
I agree.
I mean,
isn't that crazy?
It is.
Us three are like the one. Anyway, before we go to another, we could go for like 4 hours. Anyway, let's go. So Tesla, you went and visited Franz and Lars when they launched, I believe it was the Model Y 3. Refresh.
Yeah, the Model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Model Y refresh, you went through, you checked it out. We saw the videos out there from the Monroe YouTube channel, Monroe Live. Make sure you go check it out. Check them out on YouTube. And the thing they're working on now is, and this is where they're coy. We've had conversations about this before. We talked about Slate getting into the bottom half of the market, or really the bottom quarter of the market, and really trying to drive down, basically taking advantage of a market that nobody's in, that they're going to basically make for themselves with a very affordable, heavily customizable car. And the thing we're waiting from Tesla, we have been waiting for a long time, was their ability to go down market below with the Model 3. And so based on your conversations with Lars and Franz, and what you've seen so far, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the quarterly reports at all. Where do you think Tesla's at? Because I feel like, I think part of me almost says that, you know, there were rumors and news reports out there from a year or so ago that said they're abandoning the bottom half of the market completely with a drivable car, and they're just going to go fully autonomous. Where do you stand with how you're thinking about Tesla in the lower end of the market?
Okay, so we look at the what I'm going to call the Model 2, because everybody calls it a cyber cab, but really it's the Model 2. And it doesn't have a steering wheel, and it doesn't have an accelerator or a brake and stuff like that. Let's talk a little bit about the market that they're going after. Is it the market that everybody else is going after? No. Attack where your enemy is not. Elon is not a chess player. Or sorry, not a checker player. He is a chess player. And he's going for a market that nobody's looking at right now. And if you talk to younger people, like say 14 to say 25, that 10-year thingy, they don't really need or want a fast car, a stylish car, or a car at all. What do they want? They want something that's going to take them from here to there like mom did. Mm-hmm. So what car are they going to want? Are they going to want an old muscle car, a used car? Are they going to want ICE, or are they going to want EV? I think they're going to want an EV, and I think they're going to want to go from here to there at two at a time, because that's the way it works. I mean, people usually have a friend, and the friend goes with you everywhere, and two at a time. So when I looked at the Model 2, I looked at the future. When I tapped it, I knew that ring told me that it was made out of carbon fiber, probably hand laid up. What they do in the future, maybe still some sort of composite. I believe it will be a composite. When I stuck my hand underneath, okay, that didn't feel like sheet metal or extruded aluminum. I think I understand what's going on. So I gave a speech a while ago at the supercar seminar, and I regurgitated it a bit when I talked about what I think the future car will look like. And that was just prior to going to Tesla to see Franz and Lars. And guess what? To me, it's the same thing. I believe that Tesla will dominate the small car market. And I believe that the domination is going to come from people who, when they get that thing out, are probably somewhere between 16 and 30. And they're going to buy a lot of them. And they're going to be relatively inexpensive. Are they going to be 20 grand? Nope. But there's a lot of people who can afford 30 grand without any problem whatsoever. And it'll make it safer. Their insurance probably will plummet, because if you're a teenager and you want to get a driver's license and drive dad's car, dad better have deep pockets, because and I've got this right now with one of the kids that we know, his car payment is less than his insurance payment. Why would I ever want to get a car if that's the case? So with something where it's self-driving, the insurance companies are going to look at that, rub their chin and say, this looked like a better, safer bet. So that's what I think is going to be happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it really does feel like, and again, we'll see what happens here. We should find out here in the next couple months. It really does feel like the way they're trying to get their prices down with these rumored cheaper cars that are supposed to come out in the next couple months, they're just going to be cheaper Model 3s and Ys. That's what it feels like to me.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
We didn't talk too much about the 3 and the Y. The Y, by the way, is vastly nicer than the Model Y. We've had 4 or 5 of them here to Torrid Town. The new Model Y is quiet. I mean, unbelievably quiet. It feels much better. Its self-driving characteristics are better than, I think, better than a Cybertruck. And I have one of those. And I'm telling you, it's really a nice vehicle. If they decontent it and stuff like that, that might be one way to get going. But at the end of the day, I don't think that's. I think what they really want to do is get into a Model 2, which will basically crush the entry level kind of market.
But you're viewing that. You're viewing that with a steering wheel and pedal as well? Like, do you really think that?
Okay, no.
So
no steering wheel, no pedal. Wow. That saves a lot of money. I mean, you take a lot of money out of a car if you don't have to have that. Basically, a spear for your chest and two pedals that a lot of people, when they get confused, they can't remember which one to press. It just, this is, I mean, this is made for somebody who is not going to be a good driver. So,
yeah. I think that, man, it's so wild to actually think through this reality, which is Tesla has made the decision that moving forward, basically, they're just going to, any new models are going to be without steering wheel and pedals. They're going to populate the markets. They're going to go all the way down as low as they can from a cost per mile perspective. And then good luck to anyone else trying to enter that market, because they're going to dominate it with their economies of scale, right, and their AI supremacy when it comes to vision-based models. And that's right. It. And good luck to everybody else trying to enter. Yeah.
So while we've still got a little time, can I talk about the
Please. Other stuff? Please.
Okay.
As long as you want.
This is almost a commercial. Almost.
Okay.
This. Ooh. This is what Monroe does for a living in the defense world. Okay. See all those things? That's all stuff we've done. Okay. I want to show you what happens when we take on standard designs from, I'm only going to do ships and, ships and bullets, basically, but aircraft, missiles, bombs, you name it. We've been doing it for a long time. Have a look at that. See what's on the left, see what's on the right. That's our design. The engineers that were on this design walked out. This is how we always make stuff. This is what I thought would be a good idea. Stealing the information from a different industry. What industry was that? Oh, that would be the machine tool industry. Just make a manifold block, stick two pumps on it, call it a day. And that wasn't the best one. The best one was, hey, take a submersible pump, throw it in the lube oil tank. What did that do for cost? Well, here, let me go across here because it's going to be hard to see. But anyways, annual savings was $1.4 million because we were looking at three ships. That's a lot of money. And that's looking at everything. Okay, so at the end of the day, this is what we crank out to tell people what can be done. And does it work? Well, let me show you what happened on that ship with the lube oil system. This is it right here. And what does that guy have to say? I don't know, because I can't read
it. Can I read it? I can read it.
Oh, you can read it? Oh, okay, good. All right.
I mean, you are showing it to me.
yes, I am. Go ahead. Yeah.
I can't state in strong enough terms the overwhelming potential for cost savings demonstrated in the Monroe Lean Design Methodology from Alden Sproul.
Yeah. So let's look at somebody else's, what they had to say. Seeing as you're a good reader.
I try to be. It's not my first language, but I'll try my best. 45% less parts, 75% less fasteners, 60% less manufacturing operations, four ship savings about $750,000, and 7,700 hours. This is from Ray Williams, Director of Naval Architecture, Electric Boat Corporation.
Not bad, huh?
Seems like you guys do good work, Sandy.
Yeah, okay. Seeing as we're talking about submarines, here you go. What about this one?
The lean design work with Monroe Associates provided a structured process to analyze the design and identify HMS Astute improvements. It contributed to a successful program of work that delivered significant savings, meeting the challenges faced by the project. This is from Peter Newman, head of adjacent business at BAE Systems Maritime Submarines.
Perfect. And now, something that just happened here a little while ago.
Let me see.
You can't possibly read all of this.
Even with my glasses, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
This is the bullet that we helped work on. At the end of the day, I could keep going. I have tons of crap. I got this one. Yeah. I got more stuff.
You got all the slides.
But at the end of the day, what I really want to get across is we can help reduce a lot of cost associated with defense kind of products. Right now, we have a serious situation. The Chinese can produce somewhere around 300, 400 ships per year. We can do four.
Yeah.
That's, and by the way, that's not That includes, these are big ships, like 1,000 feet long. That includes things like one or two military products, and then the rest of them might be oil tankers or something. We are way behind the curve. And the reason for that is because of a bunch of old, stupid 1947 rules and regulations about how a ship should be made. Holy mackerel. Okay, so that's where I'm heading, is I'm going to be doing some of that stuff. But we've got the same problems associated with ancient rules and regulations that slow things down. People in the military need and want really good products. If we can come up with a way to reduce the cost so they can get more, I mean, when you're looking at this thing, $1 million and it's only a lube system, think about the rest of the stuff that we've worked on, pretty much anything you can imagine. And it's always like 50, 60% reduction. Why? Because there's rules and regulations that have been in place forever. These standards have to be annihilated. They have to be eliminated so that we can move ahead. And the Chinese, I've been to their shipyards, I've been to the Korean shipyards, and I've been to the Japanese shipyards. And they are brilliant. They are magnificent. We have to move ahead with shipyards. And quite frankly, I'm hoping that this new aircraft, this new fighter that's coming out, the F-47, or I don't know. And we worked on the F-22, a little bit on the F-35, not very much. F-18, F-16, whatever. We have to have a really good, really good Air Force, a really good Navy, and the ground equipment, again, is just absolutely rife for redesign. So we've talked about, you know, how I think, as far as defense is concerned, what I think should happen with business in general. Well, now we've got the other option here, or tragedy, or potential tragedy coming up. What are we going to do to defend the country we have? Okay, yeah. So we talked about, a lizard and maybe some air pollution and stuff like that. What happens if we have a real confrontation? What are we going to do if we have a real confrontation? This isn't like going to Afghanistan. This will be something where it's here in our backyard. What are we going to do? This is something that the American people aren't thinking too much about because, yeah. Well, what about the draft? What about the, you know, as in the football draft? What about, you know, what about whoever some, I don't want from a TV, but whatever the new TV program is, what about that? That's really important, isn't it? Or some of the baloney news that we continuously get. We've got a real situation. If you look at military history and whatnot, we are ripe for the picking. Ripe for the pick. Just like the Romans, they lost out. The Egyptians, the Greeks, you name it. Point at one of them, any one of them. What happened? The people in the country got fat, dumb, and lazy. And they went for cheap. That's what happened. So I just want to make sure that everybody knows that just Monroe is known for reducing costs on cars and stuff like that, redesigning vehicles. We've done lots and lots of innovative stuff. But what we really need right now is much more innovation, much cheaper. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Much less cost with a whole lot more functionality in the defense world. So I know everybody's all pissed off about Elon being in government and stuff like that. But somebody has to reset the clock here. We've fallen behind. It's time to move the needle. And if we don't do it quickly, we're going to be in serious trouble.
Yeah. And hopefully when we get back together for our birthday bash conversation, seeing all these regulations finally being put at a reasonable level where industry can thrive and things that you personally work on and you're very close to finally have the much needed boom and revitalization and resurgence that we've been desperate for the last few decades, then we can come back on and you can tell us about how you've gained a million customers and Monroe is up $1 trillion.
I care about my customers. Anybody that's paying me,
I think it's even more than that, Sandy. I think you care about the country.
I do. I'm nervous. Yeah. And this is where I live. Like you, I wasn't born here. I chose to come here. Well, your dad, mom, they dragged you along. Well, that's good.
Yeah, but I'm glad they did.
So am I. Yeah. So, but at the end of the day, we have to start thinking real hard about the future. It's not going to be a gold star on everybody's forehead. It doesn't work that way. We have to start thinking about how do we get the job done? How do we do it cost effectively with the maximum amount of functionality? How do we spend our money? Do we spend it on something that, we can get it cheaper in China? Or do we spend it on, it's made here. Maybe the union made it. Oh, my God. That's bullshit. They're Americans. Yeah. They may be in the union, but they are Americans, and I want to put Americans to work. I don't care about somebody who's in China that's doing it cheaper. I only care about Americans. I want to see Americans working, and I don't want to see them puking their guts out in an alley in San Francisco. That's what I don't want.
Love it. LeanDesign.com, at TeardownTitan on X, Sandy Monroe, American legend, brother. Thank you so much for making the time.
Absolutely. Okay, great. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.